is William, hopefully your favorite videographer from Two Hats Publishing. I welcome you to another Two Hats special of community events. Let's look in and see what's really happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guests today are from Rainbow Lulac, Lex Trevino, who is the District Deputy Director of
North Texas Lulac,
which is above Rainbow Lulac, so he's not a rainbow anymore. Paul Gallegos, who's the Vice President of Rainbow Lulac, and Sonny Garza, who's the President this year of Rainbow Lulac. Welcome.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Oh, I'm glad you came. We have just a number of things that we want to talk about, but first of all, I think most people don't even know what Lulac does. What is Lulac?
Well, Lulac stands for the League of Latin American Citizens. We are a civic engagement organization, and our council, the Rainbow Council, focuses on HIV prevention, and right now we're working on our school supply drive, which is going to be next month, and most of the funds and the supplies will go to the LGBT homeless youth in the Dallas community. And if there's anything you wanted to add for the district?
We're giving also to the middle school, and I say we because Lulac and Beth Elbana have done the school supply drive together for a number of years. You know, and everybody thinks, gee, that's a peculiar combination. And it's like, well, not really.
Not really.
They like kids. We like kids. They live in Oaklawn. We live in Oaklawn. They're gay. We're gay. You know, it's like,
yeah.
We have a whole lot more in common than is different at all. The school that's on the corner, it's a middle school on the corner of Inwood and...
It's Rusk Middle School.
Rusk Middle School. We're giving some stuff to them. Yes? Good.
Last year was the first year that we actually gave to Rusk Middle School. It was the first time that we ever went out of elementary schools, and it was amazing. The students actually got to come out. They saw the supplies that we were bringing. The principal introduced us, and it was a really good feeling. And that's kind of what led to this year. One, of course, the partnership that we have with the congregation, and it's always been our dream, as you know, to kind of expand this. So now we've actually partnered with Stonewall Democrats of Dallas also, and we are expanding into high school. So this year, we have been blessed to be given a donation by United Healthcare, and we are going to be donating $2,500 to homeless youth that are going to North Dallas High School.
So more homeless youth go to that high school than any other high school in Dallas, and there are like 40 high schools in Dallas. So.
They house like 40% of homeless youth in all of Dallas. It's, it's the largest. And their program, actually, they have a drop-in center that works not only with North Dallas, but also Rusk Middle School and Chavez Elementary School. So it's all the feeder schools that are going in. So this donation is actually going to help with uniforms for all three schools, and it's going to help with supplies for everybody.
You know, my husband teaches in that district, and he's one of the feeder schools that goes into North Dallas.
But we're not giving to his school.
You might be. You might be.
We're not going to. If it was on your list, Lex, cross it off.
I've always been surprised, you know, and this has been years. He tells me every year he has a couple of homeless students. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about this on the show before, but yeah, homeless kids do exist out there, and they need your help.
And what's amazing is that they do go to school.
They do go to school.
Regularly. Mm-hmm. But they need a little bit of extra help, and that's all we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and with the school supply drive, you know, we are focusing also on the teachers because, you know, they pay a lot of money out of pocket, like $500 to, you know, $1,000, you know, from their pocket, you know, each year for supplies and things that their students need.
More in these schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
because there's such a big need. There's such a big need.
And for those who don't think, if you're listening, you don't have kids, you're thinking, oh my God, what's the big deal? Buy, you know, a couple of tablets and some pencils. No. There's some lady on Facebook made a video about how buying school supplies, you practically need to take out a second mortgage. Of course, that's an exaggeration, but I mean, as somebody who has a kid, yeah. What they send home as far as the list of supplies they need, it can be costly for one kid.
Well, what people don't think about is it goes beyond the school supplies. You know, you've got your pencils, your paper, your folders, right, and all that. Mm-hmm. Then you got to think about uniforms, mm-hmm, socks, underwear. Mm-hmm. And then for these kids who are homeless, which, you know, people think of homeless and they think of the things that they see on TV, but you don't realize there's kids that are couch surfing. They're jumping between aunts and uncles, you know, friends. Right. They just kind of are sleeping on couches and in different places. You know, they need toiletries. They need shampoo, conditioner, deodorant. You know, sometimes those things are a luxury to them. And that's why the drop-in center is important at North Dallas, because they offer all of those things. You know, you can come in and you can get whatever toiletries you need or assistance with uniforms, and they're helping everybody out. They don't really question, because not only do they house a lot of the homeless youth at North Dallas, but about 90% of the school is under the poverty level. So it's an important asset that they have in that school.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, it was their idea. They wanted to name dedicate this year's drive to Brian.
That's so cool.
To my husband. Yeah,
Cool. that's an honor for us.
So, I mean, every time I think I'm doing better, it's like they go and do something like that, and I'm in tears again. So, but his mother really appreciates that. She thought that was very sweet.
He was always a blessing to have during the drive. Mm-hmm. He always smiled. He was ready to do anything. He was on top of everything.
And on the Beth Albanaz side, he did all the shopping. I have to do it this year.
Oh, that's going to be interesting. I don't know if you can schmooze those discounts.
They were telling us, how are you raising your money?
So we're doing a couple of different things. One of the big things that we've done, which is a lot of fun, and it's something that we don't usually do, is we've been hosting drag shows.
Oh, yeah.
So last month we did our first, we call it the Drag Knockout, and the winner is crowned the Knockout Queen. So we had four girls compete last month at the Nines Bar in
the Bronx. And who emceed?
It was actually Laron. And we also have Krista De La Rosa, who is going to be there today, because we're having our second round today. And it's going to be an amazing show. We had a blast.
How was Laron's dress?
It was beautiful. I want to know about his heels.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
They were flats.
and they raised a lot of money.
We did great. It was a great show. These girls were flipping and splitting and jumping off the stage. And I don't even think I was ready for this.
The stage was like this big.
It was amazing. And even in our final battle, what we did is we had the top two, and we brought out two buckets, and we said, all right, we're going to determine this in tips. And we raised almost $250 on the last song alone.
Wow. Yeah, I thought you were about to say $250 total. Like, no, it was way more than that.
No, that was just the last song. We did pretty good, so I'm very excited.
And when you're buying notebooks for kids and buying them by the carton as opposed to individually, that $250 goes a long way.
It does. Yes.
That'll supply notebooks for several classes.
Yeah, buying cases of paper and folders. Right. I mean, and a lot of places have been real nice, and they've extended, you know, discounts. Last year, Walgreens worked with us and gave us a big discount on a bunch of backpacks, because we actually stuff the backpacks full of everything, and then we drop them off to the students ready to go.
Now, you heard how they're doing their fundraising, the Beth Albanaz side of it. I'm calling people and talking to people as I see them. The school supply drive. Lulac's naming it after Brian. I need money.
Cough it up, people.
So give me a check. And that's my gracious way of doing fundraising.
Of course it is.
Hey,
it's worked.
I was going to say, whatever works.
It worked. It worked. So tell me a little bit more about what LULAC as an organization does.
Well, LULAC actually is a national organization. Mm-hmm. They're the oldest Latino civil rights group in the nation. And what they focus on is they focus on socioeconomic health of Latinos in the United States, civic engagement, education. Now, us, LULAC 4871 is actually the first Rainbow Council that was founded in the nation. And that
Which doesn't surprise me that Dallas is the place where we have the first gay group, because what do here in the gay community? We form groups.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We organize. That is one thing about Dallas.
Lots of firsts in Dallas. I mean, we have the first black tie dinner. We were just talking about that. Mm-hmm. Black tie dinner. The first chapter of the National Coming Out Project was here mm-hmm. in Dallas.
Victory Fund.
William Wayburn.
William Wayburn, who owned, he was president of Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance. He owned Crossroads Market, and he went to Washington and founded Victory Fund.
The first LGBT radio show.
First LGBT right. radio show is right here.
That's
right.
And you're on it.
The first black trans group. Or group.
Yeah. Right, mm-hmm. right. They started a local group, realized there wasn't anything like it anywhere else, so they said, okay, we're national.
And HRC's Federal Club started here.
Federal Club did start here. So anyway, so the fact that Rainbow LULAC started here, now they're all over the country.
Yes, we have several other LGBT councils in San Antonio and in RGV, which is the Rio Grande Valley. And, you know, our council...
Well, in New York, and they're...
Yeah, also all over the country.
We've got one random one that popped up somewhere. I believe it's Kansas. I don't know where they came from, but they just said, hey, we're here.
Awesome.
You know, and this is important, because it's not that gays and lesbians and trans people were not part of LULAC before, and it's not that there weren't Hispanic LGBT people before. Of course there were. But by distinguishing yourself, it called the national organization mm-hmm. to pay attention to your issues.
Well,
and to all of our issues.
Prior to starting a gay group as part of LULAC, do you all know how receptive was LULAC as a national organization to LGBT members?
Now, LULAC as an organization has always been receptive to any group that has been overlooked, basically. That's why they started this. Our national president at the time, I believe it was Hector Flores, kind of took a look and said, you know, who else is being missed? Who is being overlooked that we can kind of help lift up? Because we were doing really good at the time, and he said, you know, it's our LGBT people. You know, our gays and our lesbians are out there. They're being overlooked. And it's this whole idea of intersectionality. You know, I'm not just a Latino. I'm not just gay. I'm not just, you know, anything. So it was like, what are these individual things that you believe that are affecting you that are actually affecting us all? Because in the long run, I've had this conversation multiple times with people, and I'd say, you know, the guy that's coming for trans rights is also the guy that's coming for immigrants, is also the guy that's coming Absolutely. For women's rights. And when we realize that and we all come together as one group, we can take it back.
Well, like the Nazi rally downtown.
Boo.
Okay, so they want to save the Confederate memorials, right? Which was Civil War. Which you're thinking, that has nothing to do with Nazis. So why are they chanting, Jews will never
replace us?
But then they say they're not Nazis. Hmm. They're like, I'm not Nazi.
That's just okay. Real interesting. I found that when people hate people, they don't just hate the Hispanics.
Right.
Because right. you don't speak English. They don't just hate the Jews because you don't go to church. They don't just, they hate everybody. Mm-hmm. They hate every group. And we all need to work together to get rid of that kind of nonsense. So one of the things that I think your group did, while they were receptive to gays and lesbians, I don't know that they were particularly concentrating on our issues.
You True. Forced that.
Yeah, we're a pretty loud voice.
Yeah, you guys.
We have a tendency to speak up and stand up, and we kind of, you know, they've always told us if there's not a place at the table, then you make your place at the table.
Well, but if there isn't a rainbow group, if there isn't an LGBT group like yours, why would they necessarily be thinking of your issues if nobody brings them up to them? Right. It might be obvious, oh, yeah, we support you, but they've actually taken a lead. And we were trying to remember before the show, but Sonny, you said it was on marriage equality. The NAACP came out with a statement, mm-hmm. and LULAC came out with a statement at just about the same time. It was like within days of each other, and I forgot which one actually came first.
I don't know.
And both were within days of President Obama saying he supported marriage equality.
And that's what was so important about it, was that he had the backing of some national organizations there. And it was about marriage equality, that they came out and we support marriage equality. And you don't think of that as being particularly something that the Hispanic community supports. But it was kind of obvious for your group, wasn't it?
Yes.
What kind of pushback was there on that?
I don't think so. You know, it's like with any other group. As an organization, they have one voice. But there's always individuals within the organization who have different opinions and ideas. And we've had some situations, we've had some people speak up and say, you know, that this isn't really what they believe in or they wanna push for. And the thing is that we agree as an organization. So we tell them, look, if this isn't your thing, if this isn't, you know, what it is, we're here and we are opening this door for you. We will speak with you. We will, you know, you can come to our group. You can learn whatever you want. If not, LULAC has so many other things to focus on that no matter what you do, you're still working with us and for our cause. Mm-hmm. So you know what? If you don't want to go out and march for gay rights, then turn around and register voters. Then do something else, because I guarantee you your registered voters are still going to be voting with us. You know, it's just the way that it is. So that's what we do, is we open our doors, we open our hearts, we open, you know, ourselves up to everybody that's out there to give whatever that we can, whatever information, whatever knowledge that it is that they need, you know, and to set an example. That's the other thing, is that we want people to know that we're not, you know, that gay people or LGBT people in general are not stereotypes. They're not what you see on the movies. They're not what you see, you know, on TV. We're not always the funny secretary.
Well, Josh, our board operator, he's a stereotype.
Proudly.
We need to take a break in like a minute, but we can take it a minute early. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Tappet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guests today, we're talking to people from Rainbow LULAC. Actually, well, I guess, Lex, you're from Rainbow LULAC, but you've been promoted.
Yes, I'm the deputy director of North Texas LULAC.
Oh, wow. Nice.
He's going places with that group. Paul Gallegos is vice president of Rainbow LULAC here in Dallas, and Sonny Garza is president. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly.
This is Rollins Gellin, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3. Darn glad to be doing it.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here with Patty Fink and LaRon Landis. Paul Gallegos is vice president of Rainbow LULAC. And Paul, you were telling me you came out at, you waited a long time. You came out at the age of 12.
Yeah, at the whopping age of 12, I did.
Wow.
And what I didn't tell you is my reasoning for coming out was, mm-hmm. I don't like quiet noises. So it was one night, it was me, my mother, and my little sister. We were driving on the highway, the car was quiet. I just turned to my mom and I'm like, hey mom, I'm gay.
At 12.
Well, that'll start a conversation in a car.
Wow, so you like the shock value.
Oh yeah, and for my mom, I've always said I'm so lucky to have a mother like her. My mom was very, very, very accepting from the get-go. She told me, that's fine, just love who you love, just be safe, and just be careful out there. But my mom was very supportive from the start.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's amazing. That's really
now,
awesome.
But you also come out to your friends at school? Because that's around junior high age. That's not...
Yeah, no.
It's barely
no,
junior high.
Yeah, it's barely junior high.
No, when I came out to my mom, it was very hard for me because I was still trying to find myself and mm-hmm. who I am. So I came out to my mother. I was diagnosed with depression in, I'm gonna say, 97 or 98. I'm old. That makes me feel old saying that. But
it was the last century.
Yeah.
Hey, you don't know what old is.
I was gonna say, you don't know what old is.
I'm 30.
I don't know what old is either.
Oh, girl, you're 30. I'm not old enough to be your dad. But David is.
But I was diagnosed with depression. I was growing up, for me, I was very suicidal, coming in and out. I was on so many antidepressants at the time, and in 2009 I got out of a really bad relationship, and so I went to Job Corps. I don't know if anybody's heard of Job Corps.
Oh yeah, of course.
When I went to Job Corps in Ozark, Arkansas, I was there for a year. When I came back in 2010, it was towards November that I came back. November 5th of 2010, I still remember that date that I came back. I was good all throughout Job Corps. You know, Job Corps put me in a position that I've never been before, because I was the first openly gay student on their campus. This was Ozark, Arkansas, like in the middle of a mountain. It's where the campus is at. So I was the first openly gay student. Within 3 months, I became the student body president. And a lot of staff there, mm-hmm. they were not supportive that I keep out.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, you have to worry about these kids, these teenagers, and these people, what they might do to you. I've never been scared of anything. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a jump first, think later mm-hmm. type of guy. You know, to the staff's surprise, the very next day, a bunch of students walked up to me and they were like, hey, we're glad you were up front with us. We're here. If anybody tries to do anything to you, just let us know. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
Within 3 months, I became the student body president. I was dorm president. I won all sorts of awards while I was there. And then I came back in November.
And this is where it gets interesting, because you said LULAC saved your life.
I did, because when I came back, my depression just came back, and it came back hard. I was diagnosed with diabetes at the end. I would try not to get emotional, because this bothers me a lot. But I was diagnosed with diabetes at the end of that year of 2010. I spent Christmas, my birthday, and in the hospital.
You're doing fine.
You're doing good.
I really wish that I knew about LULAC and
take a deep breath in.
Oh, I need a second.
All right.
That's okay.
That's okay. So, do y'all have other members with LULAC? Well, when I helped you guys host a couple of weeks ago the drag show, mm-hmm. I met some of the other members, and they were pretty young.
Yes.
I was so
youngish.
Yeah, youngish. In their 20s, and I was so impressed at how much they had done already. Is that, you know, particularly with the Rainbow Group, where is that, you see that a lot? Like a lot of young people want to get involved.
Yes, you know, we do have a lot of, we're starting to accrue a lot of youth right mm-hmm. now, you know, in the transgender community. And we also have several other officers, of course, like Paul, he's our vice president. Armando Martinez is our secretary. And we, you know, we do have several seats. And we just try to, you know, try to create like a safe environment for all ages.
That's good. Yeah. Well, one of the other things I like about LULAC and NAACP, you know, you're bringing up David Howe. They both came out within days mm-hmm. of each other, support of marriage equality. You know, there's this perception, and I have to stress perception because I can't say that it's real. There's this perception that communities of color, particularly the Hispanic community and Black community, are more homophobic than the general population. Mm-hmm. But then when you see their national organizations, you know, NAACP and LULAC, and they embrace us, I think that makes me feel good. It always has made me feel good. What do y'all think about that as far as this perception in, like, the Latino community, the machismo, more homophobic?
You know, the thing about LULAC is, and this kind of ties everything together, so we are an adult council. We also have what are called young adult councils that are for people who are from 18 to 29, I believe, or 27, something like that. And then we have our youth councils, which is usually those are housed inside of the high school. So they're feeder councils. So whenever we have a national mandate that comes down, it comes all the way down, and it really helps those kids in high school that might have a very small, closed view and only hear what their parents say. Mm-hmm. When they hear that these national level speakers, you know, these national level people are pushing a different type of agenda, and they're really giving some you know, some elaborate points to think about and to speak on. So it's really cool because it really helps the students get a lot more exposure, I guess. Besides, you know, a lot of people are just kind of stuck in what your parents believe, and sometimes that's not what you end up growing up to believe.
Mm-hmm. And from those kids that are LGBT in those youth councils that may not, maybe struggling with coming out, or so that's got to be affirming to know, wow, you know, from the top, at LULAC nationally, I'm being supported. Maybe, you know, maybe I don't, I'm going to be okay. Maybe it's going to get better. And so that's important.
We were talking about how Dallas has a lot of the first. North Texas LULAC actually is a lot of the first. Right now, our district leadership, there's three members out of six who are from the Rainbow Council.
Wow.
So we're kind of taking over.
You kind of have one of the most active chapters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Rainbow chapter always has been.
That's why three of the six have come from your council, because you're out there doing stuff. You're making a name for yourself.
You know, and part of activism is showing up.
Right.
You guys show up everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even if it's just a couple of us, we always. And the other thing is, for us, it was identity. You know, like for me personally, Harvey Milk has always rung in my head, you know, come out wherever you are. You know, you've got to let people know that you're there. So one of our biggest things this year, and one of my proudest things, when I became deputy district director, the shirt that we have on, I know everybody can't see it, but this is a shirt that
Hold
I designed.
Hold it up to the microphone.
This is a shirt that I designed that's now available on our national website that has been selling like crazy. Mm-hmm. But this is our new logo that is a rainbow logo that's affirming for LULAC. And we have lapel pins also. And, you know, that was a big move because people would say, oh, my God, your shirt's so cool. Where did you get that made? And I said, well, I got it from the LULAC National Store. You know, and they're like, what? Like, LULAC has that rainbow shirt? And it's really cool because when we did it, when I was talking with the guy that runs the store, he's like, I want to see how this sells. And he came back about a month later, and he's like, these are, like, the biggest seller that we have. Mm-hmm. At the national convention, they were flying off the shelves.
Yeah, because we were discussing something just for our council and not for our officers, and we just wanted to make it bigger, and we actually got them to put it sell it nationally.
The whole thing about the shirt was the visibility. You know, yes, we are LULAC, but here's that intersectionality. We're Rainbow LULAC.
Yeah, we're going to come back to Paul in a minute. But first, I want to, Lex, you were talking about how helping set policy, and one of the things that you actually personally worked on was the reaction to Senate Bill 4, which is the Show Me Your Papers law. Tell us what you did on that.
Yeah, well, okay, so Texas, we got hit. We got hit hard. And you know, it's really a confusing time. And confusion causes a lot of different emotions. And the thing is that what we did is we stepped back and we said, what is it that our community needs right now in this moment? And what they need is information, because the bill or the law itself is very vague. So what we've done on a district level, and I've been part of a group that has been organizing a series of town halls. And our first one actually went off yesterday. They're going to be all over, not North Texas, all over the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. So yesterday we started at Eastfield Pleasant Grove campus. Our next one will be on September the 9th at El Centro West campus. And then we'll continue on. Right now we have four. We have a request for two more, and a high school wants to have one. So I have a feeling that these are going to continue. But what we've done is we've created this structure where we have a lawyer. Yesterday was Monica Lira Bravo, who is providing an overview of SB 4, what it means from a legal perspective.
And what does it? Just if it's short summary, what is it?
It's still very vague, but basically the law says that if you are stopped by a police officer and they stop you under suspicion that you are breaking the law, they have the right to question you on your immigration status.
So it has the right or has the obligation? It's just the right?
The right.
The way it finally passed, they don't have to.
They don't have to, but
exactly. And the thing is, a lot of people think that once SB4 goes through, that you're just going to walk down the street and the police is going to walk up to you and say, hey, let me see your papers, or, you know, and that's not how it works. Also, another something that a lot of people don't know is that it also states that if you are reporting a crime or the victim of a crime, you should not be approached about your immigration status. Which is a huge worry for a lot of people, especially some of the videos that have come out on Facebook.
It's a huge worry for the district attorney's office, because if you're afraid to talk to the police or talk to the district attorney, then the witness, it could be the only witness to a crime, is not going to be available, and the person who did it goes free.
Exactly.
That's a terrible system.
Right.
You know, as we started getting these town halls together, I was working with all the different speakers and saying, you know, this is what we need, this is what we're looking for, and we're working with DPD. They weren't involved yesterday the way that we wanted them to be, and that's because we need to sit down as a group and make sure that we're all on the same page. And that's because, you know, we were explaining it's all about cultural sensitivity. And for me specifically, I always come from LGBTQ, you know, kind of perspective. And I told them, you know, we have people who are here because they fear for their lives. You know, transgender people who are running, you know, gay and lesbian youth who are running, bisexual youth who has been put out of their homes. And you can't come in and talk like a cop. You know, sometimes you got to think about that, because if you really think about the path that this is, you know, if you get kicked out of your home and you have nowhere to go and you start sleeping on the streets and you start looking for whatever you can, a lot of times they turn to sex work. A lot of times they turn to, you know, drugs and alcohol, and this is what leads that path. So you've got to have that sensitivity and understand this. And that's a big part of SB4, because people don't think about that. You know, they focus on, you know, everybody... SB4 blows my mind, because it makes me feel like everybody thinks that immigrants are only Mexicans from Mexico who are dark-skinned. And it's not.
It's not at all.
I've threatened to start walking up to people and ask them if they're from Russia, from Germany, from Lebanon, you know, just anywhere. Anybody can be an immigrant, you know. And it's like people don't think about Syrians, you know, that are looking, they're here, they're filing for asylum. You know, that's the same kind
they're
of
refugee. Refugee. That's, I had a whole long talk this week with somebody about that. I don't even think most people understand what a refugee is and why they're here. That it's not that, oh, I want to come for a better life. It's that their whole town was blown up.
Cities, states.
Cities, like, yeah.
There's whole countries that are missing.
So what really pisses me off is that we're not trying to build a wall on the East Coast. We're not trying to build a wall on the North Coast. Northern border,
no,
with
that's
Canada.
The Canadians that are building that wall.
Yeah. Right.
They're trying to keep Americans out.
Yeah. You know, but when we say that's not the purpose of SB4, well, my fear, and I think this is shared everywhere, except for those who support SB4, is that when they do pull people over and they, you know, think you have committed a crime, like you've been speeding or whatever they're pulling you over for, that they will only look at the color of your skin.
Absolutely.
And if it's not white, they're not going to be interested in the Russian and the Czech and the, you know, the
no,
people.
No.
That's the police who will be, or the law enforcement people who will be pulling people over, that's what they're going to gravitate to, is people who are brown or black. And start harassing folks like that. And white people won't be harassed.
And no, they very much could be an immigrant.
Absolutely.
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 Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, that's just, it's just, the whole thing is crazy. And it's so, and I loved Representative Rafael Enchia calling them out on the floor of the House to say, this is a racist bill.
Oh, yeah.
And
very much so.
And yet it's passed and it's now law. And so this education that LULAC is doing in the community, so that people know what it says and what it doesn't say and what's still yet to be worked out, I think that's huge and important, and probably should still be going on continuously until this law is gone.
Yeah, and we're seeing some of the effects of SB4 right now. What's going on down in the South with the storms? And we have, it's been reported over and over that some immigrants won't go to the shelters because they're afraid that as soon as they get to the door, they're going to be checked, where's your papers?
It's an ice trap.
Exactly. And now, I don't know if I'd give him credit or not, the governor has said that won't happen.
yet.
Yeah,
I mean,
yet.
He implied that that you don't have to worry about your status.
Right.
Yet. Don't worry about it right now. Well that doesn't do anything.
That's only for the shelters that are there. Now, they did say that the ICE checkpoints and the immigration checkpoints throughout Texas are still up. So if you're trying to leave somewhere and go somewhere to North Texas, you still have to pass through those checkpoints. You know, no matter what's happening.
Aren't they flooded?
Not all of them.
No.
They kept them on all the way through South Texas. Too, they kept them open through the Harvey coming ashore.
Yeah.
All the way through. Huh. They never closed.
Okay. you know, and Laron, you're saying, and Patty, that it'll affect people of color, black and brown. I'm not sure that they're thinking black people are immigrants, so they're not going to go after this law. I'm not saying that you're not harassed.
Okay. No. We're harassed for different reasons.
Let's just be very clear about this.
This is
anti-Hispanic.
This is totally anti-Hispanic.
Well,
absolutely.
As before, they call it the Show Me Your Papers law. It is the racial profiling law.
Mm-hmm.
It is opening the door to anybody. Because, like we said, you know, you could walk up to anybody and ask if you're from anywhere, but I guarantee you, more than likely, it's going to give certain people, you know, that doorway to dark-skinned and just Latinos in general.
Yeah.
And what further pisses me off was this whole thing in the middle of the storm, all the crazy things that went on, the transgender ban, this pardoning of former Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona kind of gives free license to law enforcement across this country to feel fine about racial profiling people at large and at will.
Mm-hmm.
This was the guy who made it not just his own practice, but a departmental practice to go out and basically hunt down people to ask,
right,
where are your papers? Let me see your papers. And he was charged with contempt of court in federal court.
And he got pardoned.
And Trump has pardoned this guy, and it's a message to law enforcement that you can break the law, you can violate people's constitutional rights, and spit on the United States Constitution, and it's just fine. Because this president likes you to do that. And it's just, you know, there is no law and order president. There is no rule of law supporter of this president. It's crap. Law and order and rule of law to them means racially profiling people.
Yeah.
And that's the way they think about it.
I know we're going to break, but real quick, I know you said the law is vague, but if someone is stopped, they're asked to see their papers, and you don't have their papers, so they have the right to be detained?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay, so you're born here, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you have the same papers I have, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yeah, well,
how do you prove that?
How do you prove that?
Social Security card.
You know, you
don't carry a Social Security card.
Most of us don't carry it, so they are able to detain you. So he would have to, of course, I'm his husband, so he would have to call me and say, can you get it? And what if I'm not available? What if I'm out of town? Or, you know, I can't get to him like in a day or so. So he's going to be sitting in jail waiting for that documentation to be shown.
Wow.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laron Landis. Our guests are Lex Trevino, Paul Gallegos, and Sonny Garza from Rainbow Lulac.
Hi, this is Valletta Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will, too.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. You know, you're talking about Hurricane Harvey and talking about your friend Trump. Here is a concrete example of what he has done that is killing people. People were told to evacuate from the coast, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some people didn't. Do you know why? Because they heard it on the fake news. I'm not going to listen to the news. It's all fake. The president told me.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and people are dying.
And what's even more concerning, I think, is a lot of people who have been listening to what the governor said have, you know, thought, well, that'll be okay. I can take this bus out of South Texas and get someplace more inland, get off the coast and away from all this incoming wall of water. And he's not even made it a welcoming thing for people to really seriously protect their lives. And it's, to me, that's just inhumane. You know, it's like saying, well, you know, we might come for you, But maybe not. So try to get out of there. I mean, it's just, it's cynical, it's half-hearted, and it's just it's as racist as can be. And if he's not genuinely asking people to leave because he wants to help save their lives, get out of there, don't stay in the way of danger, it's just, you know, he's just...
Exactly. And I do want to shout out for the Dykes, who've saved lots of people.
Yes. The Dykes are important.
Paul.
I got that.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
That word I like. No, in that way.
Paul was telling me a story before the show about how Lulac saved his life and started the story. It's very, it's emotional for you.
It really is. It's,
can you tell us just in a nutshell, how did Lulac actually save your life?
I came back from Jump Corps. I was diagnosed with diabetes. I wasn't having the best time of my life. I was 320 pounds. That was my biggest.
No way.
No way. Yes. We need to talk after the show.
Yeah, because Laurent's getting
help
there.
Yeah, you got to help me, man.
He had a baby, and he never lost the baby
Seriously,
weight.
Seriously. You have got to. We've got to
I have
talk.
Pictures, if you don't believe me.
I don't.
And then Lex knew me when I was bigger. I was a big boy, but...
I've seen pictures. I didn't know.
So how did you find Lulac?
Through my friend, Marco de los Santos, who was starting the youth Rainbow Council at the time, or the Young Adults Rainbow Council, I should say. And he called me. He told me he needed people to join this group. I didn't know anything about Lulac at the time. So I came out. I joined him because he's my friend, and I support him through anything and everything he does. And that's where I met Lex. And Lex is actually a big contributor to why Lulac helped me come out of my depression and help me realize that I need to be here. Basically, Lex and Lulac helped me come out of my shell, kind of forced me to come out of my shell, come out from behind my room door, because I'm a hermit. I don't leave for anything unless I have to. With that, I found that I could do other things, and I found a support system. Lex has always been there for me. I just call him, text him, whatever. He's someone that I could talk to. I just spill my beans up and he'll listen to me, which is a big deal for me.
Now, it's important for anybody to have that.
Oh, yeah. So you start, Lulac has become like a second family.
Yeah, yeah. Now I'm 8 years in to Lulac.
And you're vice president.
And I'm vice president.
Because this one got bumped up to the next level, yes. And then yes, he'll go higher. And
so, which, by the way, I think we briefly mentioned, Lex and Sonny are married. Yes. So does that make Sonny the first husband?
We're the first family.
You're the first family.
He has the presidency for the council.
Okay.
And I'm on a different level.
Okay.
He still outranks Sonny.
But not president.
He's not president. Okay.
He's not taking that first one back home.
One of the really disturbing things that's come out of the Trump administration, one of them. One of the many things, disturbing things that's come out recently, is that they're talking about rescinding DACA, which is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. I know a number of people who signed up for it. They were able to get papers so that they could work, and it's been, and they've been able to get driver's licenses. So basically, they have paperwork. They're here on a legal status, and that's makes a huge difference. I have one friend who refused to sign up for DACA because he said, you know, I said, why? You know, who don't you trust? Don't you trust Obama or the Obama administration? He said, I trust them. I don't trust the next guy. And we all thought, what could he do? Well, the next guy is talking about rescinding it. How devastating will that be?
I think that if that rolls, if nothing gets rolled back, I think that's just flat out cruel.
Well, because people signed up, they have records, they know where anybody who signed up for DACA lives.
It's really no different than the trans service member serving right now openly in the military under Trump, because he's basically gaslighted all of them.
Right.
You know, that's like, well, we're not going to accept anybody new into the military who's trans, and we don't know what we're going to do with all y'all.
Right.
But we know who you are. If you were out and you were preparing to, continue to sign up again for maybe for another tour or whatever, they know who you are. You know,
because they were accepted. There was no reason not to know who.
But with DACA, you're talking about kids or young adults who have been over here since some of them a baby. Mm-hmm. They are part of our society. They know nothing different. And when I get fiercely angry when I hear somebody says they need to go back. Go back where?
Right. They've never been anywhere.
They've never been anywhere else.
Let's use you as an example, Lex. I don't know how many generations your family's been here. I know lots of Hispanic families that have been in Texas since before Texas was the United States. I don't know if you're one generation or 20, but let's say you came when you were two. How prepared are you to go to, I don't know where your family's from, if it was Mexico, how prepared are you to go live in Mexico all of a sudden?
You're not. I mean, some of these people, you know, when there were families that came over here and they wanted to assimilate into this, a lot of those parents, they raised their children completely different. You know, I'm not going to teach you Spanish because I don't want you to have an accent. I don't want people to single you out. And if you take a person like that and drop them into another situation and push them back into Mexico, you know, it's like you said, it's cruel.
And listening to your accent, you know what it is? It's a Hispanic accent, but it is very Texas. You have a Texas accent, really?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You do.
I have a lot of friends in California who point that out quite often.
Yeah.
Are you from Texas?
Oh, I even text y'all when I'm texting, and they giggle.
So I told them, but earlier this year I did a DNA test. Part of my ancestry comes back from Nigeria. It would be like taking me and dropping me off in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. I would be lost. Yeah. I have no idea about this culture. You know, so yeah, it is cruel to do that, and I don't know what's so hard. It's not a complicated conversation for me. They've been here since they were kids. They know nothing different. So to roll that back and send them back just to their birthplace, but they don't know that place, that's just flat out cruel.
And FYI, my fact checker, also known as my mom, just texted me and said I'm fourth generation.
Fourth generation. Oh, cool.
Thanks, Mom.
But that just shows how discriminatory this law is. I'm second generation U.S., and I wouldn't be profiled, but you would be, and your family's been here for at least as long as my family has.
Double as long as yours, David.
Fourth generation. But I'm a generation above him, so I'm saying at least.
Okay.
I'm agreeing with you that I'm old petty.
I'll take it.
You know, the whole idea behind DACA is crazy because what you're doing is you're losing a giant chunk of taxpayers. You know, and people don't realize that. They say immigrants come here and they're taking our resources and they're working our jobs, and they're not. They pay into taxes, and a lot of them don't get anything back out of it. They're putting money in that's not being put anywhere else. You know, they're just feeding into it.
You know, nurses, lawyers, you know, and for them to say, well, you know, we can just deport you and take you out of school, that's just heinous. You know, this is real crazy.
Yes, it's crazy.
What group of people can we take out of our society and just say, well, we don't want that group?
I know. White supremacists.
Oh, yeah.
We can send them back to the motherland that they talk about.
And the reason that we can is because it really is a small group. If you take that demonstration downtown last Saturday, there were 3,000 to 4,000 of us and there were 24 of them. So we're not talking major group here.
Mm-hmm. So what other plans or projects do you all have coming up aside from the school supplies?
Well, right now we've got Drag Knockout coming up today.
Tonight.
Doors open at 5, show starts at 6 at the Nines Bar in Deep Ellum. $7 donation.
Just got to put that little plug in there.
Well, you're accepting larger donations.
Yes, we accept larger donations. If you want to start bringing the school supplies,
let me take this one. We need the money. They've dedicated this year's school supply drive to Brian, so cough it up.
Cough it up.
Yes. How's that? Is that
perfect?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better myself. Now, after that, next we have the school supply drive itself is coming up. Mm-hmm. Now, after
the 21st of September.
And that's actually a two-part thing. We do the drive where everybody comes and we eat and we bring all the stuff. Well, after that, we need volunteers to come in and help us actually sort out and separate everything. And then the third part actually is delivering to the schools and getting all the supplies out to them. So that's the next big thing. We always do something for World AIDS Day, which we've been looking at something we're considering, or not considering, we're in talks to partner with the Resource Center this year, and we're going to do something a little out of the box. We're going to do something a little artsy. So we'll see how that comes together, but we're looking at doing something like... Well, it's going to be like a small acts of, you know, people's favorite acts out of their movies, plays, and different things like that. Just something to kind of change it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. We usually do our end-of-the-year party. And in December, we start doing our membership drive. So that is actually going to be the big thing for us that we're going to focus on, because, of course, we always want to bring more people in. Like you said, this year we did a big focus on trans rights. Mm-hmm. And we actually did a meeting that focused on trans youth. And from that meeting, we've had about 4 new members that have come in that, you know, one thing that I can say about what is going on right now is that this president is creating leaders for the future. These kids are amazing. 18, 19, 20, 25, 26-year-olds, they are doing things that I never could have done at their age. They have knowledge. They know what they're looking for. They know how to speak. They're getting up in front of people. These leaders that are coming up, they're going to be amazing. I'm excited about it. It's just scary that we had to get to this point to get there.
Well, and kids who are, not quite as old, and Paul's not old, but quite as old as Paul, but he came out at 12. You know what I mean? These kids know who they are earlier in life, and they know.
Yeah, but like I was telling you earlier, you know, I came out at 12. You know, I grew up in the mid-90s, early 2000s. You know, I really wish I had the type of resources that we have now to help the LGBTQ youth that are out there. I really wish that we had that back then. Mm-hmm. That would have helped out.
You know how hard
it
was for me to jump on a bus, come across town, find Oak Lawn, get to the bookstore, pass the porn, and then get to some books that actually made some sense. You know, and these kids nowadays, they got the internet, they got TV, they got groups like ours. I'm jealous to a point, but it's great, you know, because we actually got to meet one of my heroes, which is kind of funny, Todrick Hall. I know a lot of people know him, you know, he's out of Arlington. And when I met him, it was just so weird because he's, you know, so young, but he's there. And I walked up and I was like fangirling. And I'm like, and all I could think of was, I was like, if there was someone like you when I was a kid, I think my life would have been different.
Just a side note from that, we also have Pride coming up. We will have the section, the Patio of Havana nightclub, off of Cedar Springs. We'll have that reserved. And then we'll be marching with Stonewall Democrats and the Consulate of Mexico.
And then you have Latino Pride coming up. And that's not your event, but a number of people from Rainbow Lulac are planning that. In Reverchon Park.
Latino Gay, well, Latino Texas Pride. Latino Pride. Mm-hmm. They've adjusted their name now. Yes, our treasurer, Juan Contreras, actually. So if anybody has questions, reach out to him. I'll send you his phone number.
Someone's out there, what?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure he'll love
but
that.
But you can always go through us, and we're great at facilitating and getting people the information that they're looking for.
And if people want to join Lulac, how do they contact you?
Well, we have our website, which is lulac471.org. Follow us. Yeah, come to our meeting. It's every third Thursday of the month at Havana. And we, you know, also have a Facebook. You'll just type in lulac471, and you can follow us on Facebook. And just
that
before
number,
I know, we have a little bit of time.
Okay, that number I can never remember.
4871.
It would be so much easier, Rainbow Lulac.
That's our alternate name, the Dallas Rebo Lulac, I think is what the alternate name is. Or you could come out to the Nines tonight. Doors open at 5. To
and let me tell you, you need to write a check because...
Let me throw something in there, too. You don't have to be Latino to join.
Right, correct. Dude,
like I had someone on Facebook ask me that, yeah. But you don't have to be Latino to join not Facebook. Lulac. You don't have to be Latino to join Lulac.
And you could go out and just peruse the Lulac store and have a look at these cool shirts.
Yes.
You know, that's
They're awesome shirts.
The great thing about our group also, just to put it out there, is that what we do is we take what matters to our members, and that's our focus. Because we're an LGBT council, we have a very wide focus. So we kind of, we take the temperature of the council and say, hey, what's the thing right now? What is it that you want to work on and where are we going? So, you know, if you're passionate about something and you need some help and it's something that affects the community, bring it to us. Come to a meeting and say, hey, I want to talk to you about this thing, and more than likely we're going to stand right behind you and say, all right, let's make this happen.
So third Thursday of the month at Havana, what time?
6:30.
Yes, doors open at 6:30. Our meeting will start at 7.
Okay, and we're out of time. Lex, Paul, Sonny, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much, guys. Please come back again.
Yeah, I'll come back.
Thank you. We'd love to.
This is William Oakley, your favorite videographer from Two Hats Publishing. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you like it, please leave comments below or like, follow, or subscribe to us and get notices of all our videos. We love it, even when you call.